Hi, welcome to another episode of Django Chat, a podcast on the Django web framework. I'm Will Vincent, joined by Carlton Gibson. Hello, Carlton.
Hello, Will.
And we're very pleased to welcome Katya Nakamura from Fly.io. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for coming on. So you and I worked together on the Django Software Foundation board for many years, and you're still on the board, so we can talk about that. But I realized that even though I've worked with you for many years, I don't really know much about your background, other than I know you're originally from Brazil and you live in Berlin now. But maybe you could talk about how did you get into programming and what brought you from there to... You're still in Berlin, is that correct?
Yeah, I'm still in Berlin. I'm still living here.
Okay, so that's a bit of a change, you know, so studying computer science and then making your way over to Germany.
Yeah, so I will start at the beginning. So before my bachelor in computer science, I actually had a technical course before my bachelor, and it was called like industrial informatics or something like that. That's how I started with programming or anything related to that, to computers. And this was 2005, and I think that that was my first contact with programming. And I think we didn't even do like any, well, definitely anything like web programming or anything like that. I started like that. And it's funny because I didn't choose that. It was more like, okay, this is the list of courses that I can apply for. And what are the ones that I don't want to do? And then... I ended up
the
like,
last
okay,
one left.
Yeah, I think this informatics, computers, I like computers, I like internet, so let's do it. So that's how I started. And before starting my bachelor, I wanted to do like engineering. And that was my focus because I always loved math and I was going to that direction. So I decided to apply for like computer science or computer engineering, this kind of roles. Then I got accepted on computer science and I went there, but I at that point, like I didn't know the difference. So I went to live in another city in Brazil, to study computer science. During my bachelor, I had the opportunity to come to Europe for the first time to do, it was like a scholarship and it's called like Erasmus Mundus. They don't exist anymore. Yeah. I think they call like Erasmus Plus or something. I went to Czech Republic. So I stayed there for a year. And I went to the university there. It was like informatics or something. And during this period, I was traveling here in Europe. So I didn't have money and I had a lot of time, basically. So I wanted to understand like how can I travel with these companies and pay the least. So that's how my thesis from my bachelor started. So I wanted to solve this kind of problem because I wanted to solve for me.
Yeah. And then you realize it's one of the unsolved problems of computer science.
Yeah, exactly. So it is, well, it's similar. So to the traveling salesman problem. And basically I wanted to apply for like traveling as a backpacker. That point was like really
a traveling backpacker.
Yeah. That's the name of the problem, my thesis. So, yeah, it's called traveling nice. Backpacker problem or something similar. It is like a generalization of the TSP, the travel salesman problem. Because basically the TSP, you want to visit the cities and then you have the path between them, but In the case of like flights, you don't always have the path depending on the time that you are traveling, basically. So it's more restricted. So
it's a special case.
Yeah, there are a lot of restrictions that we had to take into consideration. So it was like a really interesting problem to solve. So it was fun.
And this was your bachelor's thesis or your master's thesis?
So it started as my bachelor, and then I went to master's with the same problem and trying to improve, basically.
Mm. Can I ask, what is it like? So computer science is a very male-dominated field, and I imagine at university as well. Was that the case for you, with that it was mainly men in your classes?
Well, definitely mainly, but we had a lot of women in my bachelor, and I think even in my master's. My master's, it was like computer science, but it was a specific field, which is called like operations research, which is that area that solves these optimization problems. So definitely it was, even like my technical course, it was like mainly men, but I think my bachelor was like 50 people, maybe 10, 15 women.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's odd to me that at least in the United States, most universities there's more women than men because women are better students. And yet computer science, it's true. Like I think it's 7 out of 10 valedictorians. So the person who's number one in their class in high school in the US are women. And you actually get an advantage applying to college as a man because it's less competition. Women do better academically. But, and yet computer science and many of the hard sciences, though it's changing because you have so many smart women coming in, but they still seem to have a male bent. So you persevered through that. Because like for me, abstract math and computer science, I don't think, it wouldn't work for me. Like I need to know what the problem is, which is a long way of saying, but maybe for you, if you identified this personal problem and then it had applications in theory, that probably really helped you stay motivated.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it was the opposite for me because I'm really visual. Like I like to visualize the problems. So it's not really, if you say something to me, like, and I cannot picture this, the problem itself, it's really hard for me to solve. So for me, this was like a real life example to solve. So it made sense for me.
Okay, so when you say that, I'm thinking, well, traveling sales problem is a graph problem. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to plot that. You're going to use like graph visualization and all these tools that are in the Python ecosystem. Why Python and how Python?
Well, you didn't do it in Python though, right?
Like, yeah.
Yeah, but exactly. Because computer science is always like C and Java and all these other things. But how Python in the end?
Yeah, so I didn't do my master's or even my bachelor in Python. Like at that point, I didn't know Python at all. And I was doing Java because I was working as a Java developer. So it was easier for me to do both things at the same time.
Hang on, before you carry on, could I just ask, were you then traveling around Europe, funding your travels by being a Java developer? Was that?
No, I had like a scholarship.
No, oh, okay. Yeah. Right, okay. I was wondering if you were like the original digital nomad.
No, not really. No, I had money from like Erasmus. So they gave me money for a year, but I was working before I came here. And then when I came back, I got the same job. Like I just went back to the same job.
Okay, carry on. Sorry.
Yeah, so when I went back, I went to my master's and then I wanted to come back to Europe. Like that was my plan. I want to work there or I want to live there. So I wanted to have the experience again. Oh, it's, sorry. It's not always the same experience and it's never going to be like as like an exchange student, but I wanted to come back. So I was talking to a friend from the university, from Czech Republic. And he told me that there were these guys, they came to the university to give a talk and they had this company, this startup. And it was like similar to what I was doing. He didn't know exactly what I was doing, but he knew it was like flights and traveling. And he gave, I don't remember what happened, but I think he gave me the name or the company or email or something. I contacted them. They are the founders of Kiwi.com. So that's how I met them for the first time. So they actually provided me with the data for my tests, for my bachelor and my master's. And yeah, so it was like really funny to, I didn't even know them. Like, so I was explaining like, okay, I'm doing this. I'm trying to solve this problem. So I think it's related. And they just like gave me like a dump of the database that they had at the time, like with data from the flights, the prices, so I could test. And I, at that point, like I knew I wanted to come here and work with them. But I went to master's. So that was what I decided to do. But it's really hard to survive in Brazil if you are like, if you do anything related to research and like university. Like, so it's really hard. So at some point I decided to go back to the company that I was working before. And at that point, I was already like planning to come here. So I was planning to apply for the job, but I knew that they were using Python. So I was like, okay, I need to learn Python. And maybe it's like a big coincidence, but that year there was a Python Brazil, which is like the PyCon in Brazil, in my city. So it was organized in my city, and they had like a Jungle Girls workshop during the weekend. And I decided to apply. I didn't even know what was Django at that point. Like, I was going to conferences and events, but not as much as here, but I was trying to participate. And I applied for the Django Girls, and it was good because it was over the weekend. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to go because I was working with Java, so I couldn't say like, okay, can I take a day to go to this Python conference?
You have the day off for this.
Yeah, so I didn't go to the conference, to the PyCon, to the Python Brazil, but I went to the Django Girls over the weekend. That's my first experience with Django. So I went to this Django Girls, and they actually had like 2 days. It was like Saturday and Sunday. So I met a lot of people during the conference. After the Django Girls, I applied for the job at Kiwi.com. And I got the job like a few months later. But then we had all the process of the visa, and I just like quit my job. I didn't even know, like I didn't sign my contract yet, but I knew I knew I was coming, so I quit my job. And at the same time, I applied for there was like the JungleCon Europe. They had like they had like money to support people to come to the conference.
An opportunity grant.
Yeah, exactly. So I applied for that, and I got it for the JungleCon Europe in 2016. It was, and the Django Girls, I was like end of 2015. So it was like a few months later. So it was in Budapest. It was in Hungary. And I came. So it was like the first time that I was coming to like a Django Con. That was my first Django Con. And at the same time, like because it was in Budapest, it was like really close to Czech Republic. I went to the city to visit the company that I was going to work for. Because at that point, I wasn't like formally working for them yet. And I was still going through the process of the visa. So I just went to visit.
And when you talk about getting the visa, you sort of, the gesture you use there is one of, I don't want to think about that, and pain and scars. Because even with a company sponsoring you, it's not easy, right?
No, it's not easy. And it's a long process, but I was lucky because I always had like help from the company, even when I came here to Germany. So I had a lot of help, but it's still like a lot of documents, things to be translated and things to be sent here or in Brazil. And, but they helped me a lot. So It's funny because I went to Czech Republic and I had to apply for the visa in Czech Republic, but I couldn't apply from within Czech Republic. I had to go to Austria to apply. So those are the things, like small things, but it was okay.
They call that in Britain, they call that a hostile environment, I think. just make it difficult.
Can I ask what when you studied in the Czech Republic, what language was your courses in? Was it in English? Was it in Czech?
No, it was in English. I know I didn't. I still don't know Czech. So
I mean, Czech is famously hard to learn.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's harder than German. So they say, but I didn't learn. I spent like 5 years there. I don't know how I survived. I don't know, but I didn't learn.
How did you learn English so well? Was that before you got into programming or?
So when I came here for the exchange student, as an exchange student, I couldn't speak English. Like I went to school in Brazil, like to English school, but it was like basics. So you would go to the class, you would know like the exercise, but I didn't have experience like talking. So I think I would have enjoyed a lot if I knew more, because I was really afraid of talking to people. When I went back to Brazil, during my master's, I spent like 3 months in Canada, in Quebec City, which is French, actually, not English, but I communicated in English.
Canadian French, but, too, so it's different. Like yeah, Catalan, yeah, a little exactly. Bit, Carlton, right?
It's like Quebecois. I don't know what is the term, but the difference was this time I was alone, so I went by myself, and during the when I was in Czech Republic, I went there with a friend who actually got the scholarship as well. So I was like lucky that I knew someone, and then I met a lot of Brazilians. So and a lot of people, like even people from Portugal. When I went to Canada, I was by myself, so I had to talk. I feel like at that point I was like a bit more comfortable, but not enough. And even when I moved to Czech Republic, I wasn't confident about my English, so not even today.
I know you say that today, but like... No,
your English is fantastic, so let's just put that on the table right away.
Wait, so sorry. So Quebec, I just want to follow up, because I'm just people who, you know, you and Carlton, who fluently speak so many languages, it's such a different thing than an American. Did you go to Quebec City for English? Was that the intent? Was it an English program, or you just went there and then had to speak English?
So I went to Quebec City to do like research. It was like during my master's. So
oh, okay.
I went there to work with like a professor, professors in the Laval University. And we were doing research to write the paper. So basically, but it was also like, how do you call that? Well, they gave me money to go there to spend those 3 months. Like it was like a project.
Yeah, stipend or so scholarship grant or grant.
Yeah, kind of like a scholarship. Yeah, similar. But it was like 3 months and we had like all the timeline and what we were supposed to work on. And we were supposed to write the paper after. So that was the purpose.
That's just a lot. That's so much to juggle, you know. A new language, programming, a new environment. It's just, like you must have had to come home and collapse a little bit after, just to, like, I don't want to talk to anyone for a week or two.
No, I didn't feel like that. Maybe today I would feel like that. I can't imagine doing that. But I think at that point everything was new for me. Like I always wanted to go to Canada. So for me it was like a trip. Also to visit. So
it was
a fun experience.
Carlton, you were going to say something.
Yeah, no, I just, this topic of English, you know, when I when I started out, it was just like, nah, just learn English. Like, that's what you've got to do. Like, but it's like, hang on a sec. Could step back a little bit. Hang on. Somebody wants to learn programming. They want to learn a new subject. They go, and learn another language as well. That just seems a bit much to me. Like, yeah. I don't know. Do you think we do better now is another thing. I mean, like, so if you're in Brazil now and you speak Brazilian Portuguese and you want to learn programming, are there more resources now than there were when you started? Or do you, you know, are we making progress?
Oh, definitely. Like, we didn't have, like, all the content that we have today. Like, today you can learn from anywhere, your computer. At that point, like, I think I learned by doing it. So when I went to Czech Republic, I remember like the first days or even like the first months, probably I was afraid of like not understanding people or not like, oh, they're going to ask me to they're going to give me requirements. They're going to give me tasks. And if I don't understand what they mean, like what I'm going to do. So I was like really afraid. But at that point, I wasn't like studying. Except from like doing some English in Brazil, like years ago, I think I learned on the way.
Yeah, right. You just pick it up as you need to, right?
Well, Carlton, I mean, you with Spanish, right? Like you traveled a bit, which I imagine polished your Spanish before you.
No. Right. Okay. But I went to, I had a couple of words. I went to Guatemala and I studied for, you know, however long, and I could just about order a few beers by the end of it. It wasn't until I moved here that I actually developed any sort of ability, and I had lessons and it took years. I've been here 12 years now. And so, okay, I can speak okay Spanish, but it's not something you can pick up instantly. It just isn't. It just takes time. It's a life project.
Was it 5 years you worked there in the Czech Republic?
Yeah, I was there for 5 years.
Okay.
At Kiwi.
And then you made your way to Germany?
Yeah, how'd you get to Berlin? Yeah,
I mean, because Berlin's quite hip.
Yeah, so...
Well, it's very hip. We should have a DjangoCon Europe in Berlin, yeah. Can't you?
Yeah, I was... That's one of the ideas. I don't know if soon, but if I stay here, who knows? But yeah, so...
I'm only teasing.
I stayed there for 5 years. It seems like 10 years. But I think what I... My decision to move here was mostly based on the pandemic, I would say. It wasn't like about the company or about what I was doing. It was more like I need a change, I think. So I decided to start looking for other companies or even like doing something else. And if I left the company as a tech lead and I got a job here as an engineering manager, I wanted to try this path of like management. So I decided to accept, but then basically I moved here to Germany. I was working as an engineer manager, like basically full-time management. And I was working in a company doing, it was like data infrastructure. So it was like completely different from what I was doing in a different place. In a different position, so everything changed, and I think it was a bit too much for me. And I was there for like a year, and it was fun, but at the same time, I wasn't happy with what I was doing, like as for my job specifically. Then into
programming and programming and managing people, that they're not the same.
No,
thing,
it's completely
right?
different. No, it's so different.
It's not clear though. It's the standard path, right? I'm going to go into management because. Yeah. But what of the 10 years of programming has trained you to be a manager of people? Like
it's completely different. I think I gave a talk once talking about like the tech leadership and saying that this is not a promotion. This is something else. Like, it's not a promotion, basically. You go to another path and you start doing other things. And I wasn't happy with having meetings like 3 days a week, full day, basically, like from one meeting to another meeting, doing one-on-ones. And I learned a lot of other things, like besides the tech part. You need to learn how to deal with people, how to deal with, with the whole team, like how do we work together? Because during this year that I was in this company, there were a lot of changes, like people left and then they hired some new people and then this new people left as well. So there were a lot of changes and changes on the priority. So I had to, I told my team, like, okay, I'm really frustrated. I told them because I was like super frustrated. I was actually thinking of leaving before I left. So months before that. And I stayed because of them. One of the reasons, like I wanted to leave at least with them having some direction of like, okay, from here, we were going to go in this direction because we, at some point we planned what we were going to work. We finished some work and then we were going to start something new, which was like designing something new. And one day before, someone told me that maybe this is not going to happen. Maybe. So, and that's one of the reasons I was like really frustrated. And it was at that point that I was like, okay, that's not what I like to do, basically. And I stayed there to help the team. So we got other work instead of this one, at least until they decided what to do. When this was like 2022. Yeah. Yeah. And this was like May. And then in September, I went to JungleCon. It was like the first JungleCon probably in Porto after ones, Porto, like the online ones. And I remember when I was there, I was telling people like, oh, I want to leave. I was really happy to be there.
I need a new job.
Yeah, so I think I was, and I wasn't working with Python. I wasn't doing any development, like any coding or anything like that. But I wanted to work with Python again, or at least like if I had the opportunity, like it would be my first choice, but not, I wasn't really working, looking for only Python or Django related jobs. But I decided to leave. Like I wasn't really happy with like only management things.
Yeah.
And I came back from the vacation because I took vacation to go to JungleCon. So I came back from my vacation and then I quit. It was basically like I came back on Monday, Tuesday or Wednesday. I talked to my manager, which was actually the manager of my manager because my manager had left during my vacation. So
Your vacation. Oh, wow.
During my vacation, yeah. So
this whole section is an advert of why you should come to JungleCon, folks. Like,
yeah,
but it will fix your problems.
Yeah, exactly. So I just went there. I spent like a few days with all those people talking, and like it was great. It was like really great because I came back. I was like, yeah, that's what I want to do. Like I wanna keep doing it. So I came back and I quit. But I quit without another job. So that was how much I wanted to leave the job. And it wasn't like the company. The company was great and like the people, my team, like they were great. But it was, I think, especially the type of work I was doing. Like management wasn't really what I wanted to do. And I don't regret because I chose to do that. So I could see if that's something that I'm interested. And well, at least not now, maybe someday again, maybe.
The next life, the one after
yeah,
that.
Maybe the next life, yeah.
So you're at Fly now. So did you manage to find, how did you hook up with them?
Yeah, so I quit my job and then I left 1 month later, like end of October. In November, December, I was looking for a job. And I remember that it wasn't like a great time because there were all of those layoffs and everything was happening during that point. And I applied for a few companies. Like I don't go well in interviews. Like I get really nervous. It's not something that I really, well, I don't think maybe some people enjoy doing it, but
no, I don't think
I
so.
Think most of them don't, right?
No, it's horrible.
That's a red flag if somebody enjoys interviews and like racking up offers. It's a separate skill set.
Yeah, I can imagine that, but well, I believe there are some people who enjoy that. I don't like that, and I decided to just pick just a few companies that I would apply because I didn't want to have like 5 interviews in the same week. And I wasn't working, like it's not like I was busy, but I was preparing for the interviews. But at the same time, I get really stressed, really. it's not something good. And I knew that at least like 1 per week or 2, maybe it would be okay for me to do. So I picked like few companies. I think I applied for maybe 3, 2 or 3. And then in December, Mark from fly.io, he contacted me. And I think when I read the description of the job, I was like, oh, interesting, because it's not something that I have experience with. It's more like marketing, because it's similar to like a developer advocate, but a bit different. So, but
what's your actual title? What's your job title?
Like the title is a framework engineer.
Okay.
Yeah. it's interesting because it is different. Like it's not really something that I would think, but I don't know if they had this at the beginning, just because we have like different frameworks in the company, like teams inside of the company for each framework. So it's more focusing on promoting Fly to that specific framework. So I think that's the idea.
And you also get to do a bit of like, not just a bit, but quite a lot of like working out the best way to integrate with Django, for instance.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's the main thing that we need to do, to understand like the community, what they're doing and how Fly can be applied to those like use cases and understand. But at the same time, like it's funny because how I met Fly was before that. Like I already knew Fly at that point when they contacted me. But like a month before, it was November when Heroku was they didn't have the free how do you say that,
the free tier.
Yeah, so they ended the free tier in November. I had like a project, like a personal project, and then I had to move to another place. That's how I discovered like Fly. And maybe it was your post, Will. Maybe you talked about them.
Yeah, yeah. I had a similar experience with Heroku.
Yeah,
and I said,
I think,
and then
maybe
I did a tutorial on Django and Fly, and then actually had talked to Mark around that time. I wish I'd known. We didn't mention, but you've been on the board with me for like multiple years at this point. I wish you told me you were looking, because I was aware that they were looking. I did a tutorial, and then I wrote the first Django section for fly.io. I think it was just 2 tutorials. So I worked with Mark on that, but then I was doing other things. But then he told me, I think, when they hired you, and I was like, oh my God, like, yeah, yes, hire her, absolutely. But that was, I think that was a lot of hosting companies, right? Heroku doing that meant everyone suddenly was looking around at Fly and Render and Railway, and there's a whole bunch of ones. I'm curious, and I don't know how much you can or want to talk about, you know, being internal at Fly during that time, because one thing I realized is that they were changing. You know, it's a lot of work to be a hosting company and to have to do that, and then to have framework specific tools. And Fly has a really powerful command line in tool. How do I say this? It could use improvements to be specific to Django. So I worked very, very briefly on that, but it keeps developing every time I update Fly CTL. It's like every week there's a new update. So I have a lot of appreciation for how challenging it is to do that. But I think they're getting to the point where a lot of the things like I wrote about in this tutorial and book, you don't have to do anymore because they're automating it. So it's good for customers. It's a little frustrating for me as a content creator, but that's the least important thing out of it. Yeah, all of which is to say, and now I've seen, Fly Django section, you've written a ton. Were you involved with bringing Mariusz Felisiak on board, or how did that come about, right? Because one of our Django fellows is now also writing for Fly.
Yeah, so I wasn't involved. Like, Mark told me, like, oh, there's this guy that I'm talking to, and maybe he's going to come, like, do some blog posts, because that's how it started. I was like, oh, who is it? And then he told me it was like Mariusz. And I met Mariusz like in person, probably at the JungleCon that I went. So I was like, oh, I know him. Like, okay. It was great because I already knew him. So it was like easier to onboard him, basically. And so like, we are a remote company, so we already work like remotely. So it wasn't different with Mariusz, but I wasn't involved with like getting him. So,
well, can you back up to the Django Software Foundation? I think we joined at the same time at 2020. Was that when you joined?
Yes, 2020.
So you were managing at this time, and I guess not working directly with Django. But then you're still on the board. What was that like? How did you become aware of the Django Software Foundation and then running? And I know a lot of the work you've been doing. Could you just speak about what it's been like now? Is it four years? How many years on the board? I think 4 years, right?
4 years, yeah.
Yeah. So how did you first find out about the board? Because I think a lot of people don't know about it and then, you know, decide to run and all that.
Yeah. So I don't remember how I found out about the DSF.
Yeah.
But what I remember, which is like really interesting to mention, is I applied, like I got at the DSF in 2020. It was when the pandemic started, so it was like different, I would say. I applied like I think a year before, maybe for the 2019. I think I applied. I didn't get. And in 2019, I went to the PyCon US for the first time. And when I went there, I met Kojo. You know, yeah. Kojo.
Kojo Arisa.
So
yeah.
I went. I think I was getting like my badge or something, and I met him. And he looked at my badge, and he said like, "Oh, you are Katja. You apply for the DSF." Like he remembered my name, and I was like, "Oh yeah," and he was like, "Yeah, you didn't get, but you should apply again," and he basically like encouraged me to apply again, so that's why I did. So it's basically because of him that I'm in the DSF, and I think at that point, like I didn't know a lot about the DSF, but that's how I became involved in this. Like it was like I need to thank him. So
wow, and that was in Cleveland, right? 2019. I believe.
No, it was San Diego.
Oh, for PyCon
maybe,
or Django? Did you or
Django Con?
Django
Con. Yeah, maybe Django Con. I've never been to PyCon US. Yeah, it was Django Con US. Yeah, sorry.
Okay, no, that makes more sense. okay, and then yes, I mean, you know, so one of the reasons, right, the board now has 2 year terms is because there was a bunch of us new members. And then the pandemic hit. And so I think we didn't really know what else to expect. But there was the board, and especially you, because you, you know, based in Europe, you were working a lot with the Porto team. There was a real concern, as I recall, around how do we get Django Cons going again and how do we support them? And I remember you were, I don't think it was an official title, but you were like the DjangoCon Europe liaison on the board.
It wasn't like official or anything, but it was something that it is something that I still want to get more involved with the organization here. Now we have the working groups. So that's finally something that we can like start looking for different.
Can you just pause momentarily and explain what the working group is and what the idea is there? Because in case people haven't followed along.
I don't know the official.
Well, okay, but...
yeah.
Well, so Python, so the Django board is seven people. And we, on the board, we talked to the Python board and found out that the board there just decides. They don't do all the things the way the Django board does everything and manages it. And so Python has had some success with working groups where other members of the community can take the lead on actually doing the things. And I think that was one of the reasons why the DSF has tried and has now launched these working groups, because being on the board, you're already doing quite a bit of things. And it's, you know, we realized over time that there just wasn't, these things weren't going to happen for the, you know, you couldn't ask the seven people on the board to keep doing more. So I think it was last year that the officially Django launched the working groups. Yeah.
Yeah. The last year, it like the first ones like were launched or they started, and we have like more ideas for new ones, but for now we know like some of the things that are important, and one of them are the DjangoCon Europe organization, so for the conference.
I mean, that's one of the things I'm most proud of during my time on the board was the board's work to keep or to help DjangoCon Europe, because unlike for those who don't know, unlike DjangoCon US, which has DEFNA, which has its own organization, Django Events Foundation of North America, Europe is new people every time almost. So when you have a pause in hosting them, that causes challenges, and then setting up nonprofits for the money. And I think the Porto team did an amazing job of continuing it and working on it. And now, and they're helping also the DjangoCon Europe this year as well, which is in Spain, but kind of just, just over the border. So that, there's a lot of communication with the board with that group. And I do think we need to thank that team for keeping DjangoCon Europe going, because it felt like maybe it was going to go away at some point.
Almost.
But,
and so just this new, I mean, this podcast will come out in a few weeks, but the blog post was put up this week for the call for proposals to host DjangoCon Europe in 2025. So perhaps, you know, is it to, you know, if I think, oh, could I have it in my town? I'm going to get support is the point. There's people to help me and there's, you know.
Yeah, I would say that the working group is one of the reason this is one of the reasons that we have the working group, like to support the new organizers here in Europe, because then a lot of people want to help, but at the same time they don't know what to start, and I'm one of them. Like, I'm really interested on organizing a DjangoCon, but at the same time, like, there are so many things that I have no idea. That's one of the reasons that I'm involved in the DjangoCon this year. So I want to learn, but we have now the working group, which will be like to share knowledge about the organization. And a lot of the organizers from the DjangoCons, they will be in this group to help others, like the new ones.
Okay.
So,
and if folks are listening and they think, oh, I quite fancy putting on a Django, should they, you know, even if that's just a fledgling idea, they should get in touch, right? And
Definitely, because maybe you won't be the like main organizer, but you can always like help.
So there's a GitHub repo for the working groups that I'll link in the show notes for people. Is that where people should go to find contact information and more?
The GitHub, right?
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about the talks you've given, because we've got a whole long list of talks that you've given in various languages at various conferences. And segue to that, the DjangoCon CFP is open for DjangoCon Europe this year. So I was going to try and twist your arm into submitting for that.
So I don't think I gave a lot of talks.
Well, I can see a whole list feeling on a piece of paper. How many of you have given at least half a dozen here?
No, but I think most of them were like at the beginning when I went to Czech Republic, when I started working with Django. So I think most of them, after that, I think I got more involved with the DSF and like volunteer for the DjangoCon and things more behind the scenes, I would say.
Is talking part of your job at Fly? You know, do you have to?
No, it's not. So I wanted to mention that I love talks, but I hate public speaking. So
right, okay.
It is something that I need to work on. Like, it is one of the things Fly will help with, like public speaking, or even like practicing, doing maybe some workshops. Definitely they have so this kind of things. So it is something that I intend to do. I don't know if this year at DjangoCon I'm gonna be like helping them as a volunteer, so I don't know if I'm gonna send, but I want to come back like to talks.
Yeah.
Basically giving a talk in probably Python Brazil, so like in Portuguese. And I don't know if, like, today, if I feel more comfortable giving talks in English or in Portuguese. Like, I feel it's really hard to give a talk in Portuguese now, because most of the terms are in English. So it is weird. But I'm thinking about, like, Python Brazil. Other than that, I still prefer the behind the scenes, like doing other types of work, basically.
Well, you could always do a lightning talk. That's only a few minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great idea. Yeah. I should. I can deploy a Django app to Fly in like 3 minutes.
Yeah, perfect. There you are then. Live demo. That's risking all the gods going wrong on you. At that point about the languages, I think that's... Because, okay, Spanish is not my first language, but because I don't work in Spanish, I have to think, I have to sit there and pause. Well, what is the word for this and what is the word for that every time? So to do it, the thought of doing a technical talk in Spanish is much scarier than doing one in English. I'm native English speaker, so it's not quite analogous, but that technical turn point, it's how do I describe this in that language?
Yeah, exactly. Or if you translate, it feels weird. It feels wrong.
Yeah. Or you just throw in the English word and then it's like, well, that's not very nice
either.
It's like
mixed. Yeah.
You must speak German as well now. Or do you speak German as well now?
No, I don't.
Okay, so we'll drop that bit then. No, never mind.
I knew that Berlin was like an international city, but it's always good to know the language. Like, I was living in Czech Republic for 5 years, so I knew, like, I planned to start learning German. I didn't start, and I feel like most of the time I don't need, but when I need, like, I really need. So
yeah.
I think most of the things that I need to do on the daily basis, I can do in English, and there are the bureaucracy that I cannot do in English. Most of the things related to visa. When I left my job, like, it was really scary, because I quit, and then I went to check, like, okay, I'm quitting my job, what do I need? Because I had my visa bounded to the company, and I was like, can I quit? So I had to go to the official place, like, for the work, like, you need to let them know that you're leaving the job. So this kind of situations, it's really hard if you don't know, like, German. So there are some situations.
Was there any appeal of, I mean, Spain is warm and Spanish is not too dissimilar. Was there ever any thought to that? Or, I mean, you know, because I'm from cold climates, but if I was from a warm climate, I don't, you know, Berlin does not have the weather of Munich, right? Berlin sort of famously doesn't have great weather.
Oh, it's always gray. It's snowing today, but it's not always like that, but it's always gray. I don't mind about the weather. Like, I like sun, but I like cold weather. So I want to go north.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I feel the same way. Carlton and I discussed this. I mean, his soul is warmer than mine, I think. So I did want to mention, we're almost up on time, but there's a whole section on the Fly site, Django Beats, that we'll put a link to that has the articles that you've written, that Mariusz has written, because yes, they're specific to Fly, but I think 80% of them is really just general fantastic advice on doing things with Django, actually. So I just want to shout out. I always read those and I'm like, oh yeah, that I learned something, and we feature them in the newsletter, even though generally the Django News newsletter, even though generally we don't do company specific things, but if it's very well done and very Django-y with a little add-on, then we include it. But that's a wonderful section to see that. Are there any, so I guess to form a question, are you going to continue to put the Django content there, or are there any big plans for that section of the site?
Yeah, so related to the blog, like me and Mariusz are writing for the blog. Basically, what I'm trying to do, because Mariusz is just basically writing for the blog. He doesn't have like a lot of time. I'm focusing on integrating Fly. And so I'm trying to understand more about Fly and how to use Django inside of Fly, basically. So I want to mix those things. Like Mariusz usually brings more like Django content, which is great. And then I can focus more on like basically mixing those Fly and Django.
Yeah, got it. Well, one the guest we had before you was Simon Willison, one of the creators of Django, who works on Dataset, and he's a big fan of fly.io, in large part because of the security around private containers, which we don't have to get into, but I thought that was interesting that I believe that's, if not unique to Fly, that's an unusual feature that when you spin up a new instance on Fly, it's its own private container. So like for me, when I was updating my content on deployment from Heroku to Fly, the fact that Heroku is still Git based, so you Git push and then it puts it on AWS, whereas with Fly, it basically copies everything over to a container. And so that's a shift for people who are used to Git based deployment, but seems to be the way all the modern hosting providers are doing it, you know, not just Fly. Which is sort of interesting, but something to learn for the old dogs used to get pushes.
Oh, there are so many interesting features, and I saw like Simon talking to people. There are now like GPUs now with Fly, so there are a lot of conversation like AI. And I don't know exactly what he's doing, but I know he's around there and talking to people from the company.
Yeah, I mean, he can't keep up with him. He's everywhere with ideas and insights.
Yeah.
Oh, it's can't keep up with Simon. He's on Duolingo too, and I'm friends with him on Duolingo. And we had this friend's challenge that we had, and I'd done 7 lessons, and he'd done like 45 or something, and it was like, okay, yeah, that's
probably
my week with Simon.
Probably while walking his dog. He was telling us that he codes while walking his dog. He has his phone and uses ChatGPT to, you know, so he's just you know, constantly on the brain, which is very, I always come away being like, I should be more passionate about coding talking to him, right? I mean, I am, but like, yeah, levels. Sorry, go ahead, Carlton.
No, I was just going to say, it's one of those things, don't do is compare yourself to Simon. Like, it's...
No, don't do that. Is there anything we didn't ask you about or you want to raise as we conclude? I know we talked about a lot of things, but I, you know, having known you for all these years, I never knew that your real backstory on how you, I just knew, oh, there's Katya. She lives, she's from Brazil. She lives in Berlin, that, you know, and then we talked about the matter at hand, but none of the, you don't really get the chance to find out about someone in their real background.
So now, now you know, do you have any questions?
Well, I think I asked you my question, like, why don't you live somewhere warmer? But you like the cold, so that's...
Yeah, I like the cold weather. Oh, I love snow. Oh, at least for now, but let's see.
Right. Well, we have, we'll have links to all these things. And again, for those who do speak Portuguese, Brazilian Portuguese, all your talks, which you gave, which people should go and check out. And... yeah, thank you so much for coming on. I hope some listeners are thinking about also hosting a conference and reaching out to the working group or reaching out to you for help on where to go from there.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
No, thanks for coming on, Katya.
Thank you so much. So we are DjangoChat.com, and we'll see everyone next time. Bye-bye.